The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, in the Zen tradition, there's a very famous story they'd like to tell. It's a story about karma. And that's a topic that I want to talk about a little bit. And the story has to do with an abbot of a monastery, a rural monastery. And every day, whenever he gives a Dharma talk, someone comes and sits in the back, like the people out there. Narrow. And so he gives a talk mostly to the monks, but in the back of the hall there comes this man, local person comes, wanders in. No one knows who he is. And after coming a good number of times to these talks, one day at the end of the talk, he stays behind. And he goes up to the abbot and says, "You know, maybe you can help me. You see, once upon a time, long ago, I was the abbot of this very monastery. But then someone asked me, is an awakened person, is a liberated person, free of karma?" And I said, "Yes." And because of that, my karma was to be reborn 500 times as a fox. And I've come here to you now. Maybe you could set me free from this foxhood. And so I come to ask you, is an enlightened person free of karma? So that's the question. So is whatever you might think karma is, your actions, the consequences of your actions. I teach my kids consequences. Sometimes I ask them, "Well, what should be the consequence of that?" Rather than telling them. And sometimes they participate. You know, so rather than, you know, punishing them, they have to realize there's a cause and effect relationship that they're part of. So we have this, we're part of a whole sea of cause and effect relationships. And in fact, what I think Buddhism or people would say is that everything we see, touch, smell, think, feel, all belongs to one big matrix or nexus or patterns of cause and effect. And it's quite complex how those patterns of cause and effect operate. And sometimes it's hard to see what the effect might be. If you throw a rock into a big lake, it's a still surface, you'll see the ripples going outwards. It's pretty clear and simple, the circles of ripples. But if you throw, or 10,000 people all throw a rock in to the same lake, then all those 10,000 ripples will at some point run into each other and then influence each other and change each other. And so it's very hard to see after a while how that, your ripple, how it's actually behaving in the water and going out. And so our behavior sets in motion a field of cause and effect. And to some way or other, we'll talk about how it is in Buddhism, but the teaching is that you reap what you sow. Somehow it comes back to you. What your actions, what you do in one way or other comes back to you. So you should be careful what you do. Otherwise, you might reap the results of your karma. So it'd be nice then if some, you know, if your karma is not so good and there's going to be a lot of things catching up to you sooner or later, it would be nice if you got liberated. And maybe if you were liberated, you wouldn't have to deal with that anymore. And be free of it once and for all. So the answer that he ended up as a fox was yes, a liberated person is liberated from karma. So the current abbot then was asked this question. And the current abbot said, "Oh, An enlightened person does not ignore karma. Different, right? And then, just to finish the story, then the old guy who was there asking the question said, "Oh, thank you so much." And then he explained, and then he says, "Oh, thank you so much. Tomorrow morning, go behind this hill, behind the monastery, there's a big boulder, and there you'll find the body of a dead fox. And please go collect that fox and bury it like a monk, honors of a monk or whatever." So the abbot gathers all the monks together the next morning and announces that they're going to have a funeral. And he marches them off to find the body of the fox at the end of behind the boulder and then conducts the funeral. So that's the story they like to tell in Zen. And what I'd like to suggest the idea that you don't ignore karma suggests that cause and effect, karma, still operates for someone, even, you know, someone who has enlightened. Some way it operates. And there's a famous story from the early Buddhist tradition of a man who had been a mass murderer, serial murderer at the time of the Buddha, who the Buddha went and intervened before he was going to kill anybody else. And he was going to try to kill the Buddha, but the Buddha managed to stop that. And then in intervening with him, the man decided to become a monk. And as a monk, when the king and his posse came looking for this mass murderer and found that he had become a monk, the king said, "Okay, I'll leave him alone." It's kind of like, you know, in ancient Europe, old Europe, you know, if you did some terrible crime and you made it to the church was a sanctuary. Well, somehow becoming a monk, somehow the civil law it wasn't that you were no longer, you know, civil law didn't operate. Somehow there was some deep change in the person's status. But then at some point, this mass murderer became enlightened. And he went into a town to gather his alms. You know, they go begging for food. And he went into a town where some of the townspeople recognized him as someone who had murdered someone in their village. So they started throwing rocks at him. And he came back to the Buddha, you know, bloody. And kind of asked, how could that be? And the Buddha said, you are in fact liberated. But even so, to paraphrase what the Buddha said, you set in motion a chain of cause and effect. You set in motion certain consequences, set in motion certain tendencies in the world. And so, you know, you have to bear those. You have to reap those. And so being stoned is, you know, if you go to that village, that's what you can expect. So certain things follow us into an enlightened state. You know, we think that enlightenment is, you know, enlightened retirement. So I'd like to suggest a different answer to the fox's question. Rather than saying an enlightened person does not ignore karma, I would say that a mature practitioner, enlightened or not, mature practitioner studies karma, learns from karma. Meaning that when we find ourselves in a field of cause and effect, that we look and say, how can I learn from what's happening here? How can I learn? What is useful for me to learn from my spiritual growth, from my movement towards liberation? What's useful for me to learn in this situation? What have I done? What is my contribution to this situation? The question, you know, what can we learn here? What can I learn here? I think is a very mature approach. There might be situations you find yourself in that are kind of, you know, you try to study that, you know, something's happened. You look at the cause and effect chain, and you said, well, I'm not responsible. Someone else is. The example I like to give is when many years ago, I was getting off the 280, the highway here, on Sand Hill Road and Page Mill Road. And I was going to teach. We used to meet in Palo Alto. I was going to teach Monday night. I was a little bit in a hurry to get people to arrive to tell people to slow down and be present. Just a teeny bit. There wasn't much at all. But it was a teeny bit. But so I came to that stop sign. You get off the freeway, and there was a two-way, there was a four-way stop sign, I guess. And I did my stop, and there was a car coming far away to the left, and I knew he had to stop. So he was far away, so I had stopped, and so I had right away. So I drove into the intersection, but he didn't stop. And he rushed in front of me, and he missed me. We missed each other. I couldn't quite tell, but it seemed like just a hair. It was pretty close. So there was no accident. But I thought about that afterwards. Well, in the court of law, if we had an accident, he was responsible. Right? I hope so. I wouldn't have said anything different. But I had been rushing a teeny bit. What if it was more than a teeny bit? It was a teeny bit more than teeny bit. Just a little bit more impatient, just a teeny bit. So I've been one inch further into the intersection. Boom. Crash. Bang. Who's responsible then? Well, probably to the police officer who takes a report. He would, the other guy's still responsible for the accident, and I would probably not say anything different. But that's not where the learning is. I don't learn much by assigning the blame to him. So a mature person studies the karma, studies the situation. So what is it that I could learn in that situation? And what did I learn? I learned that in some way, if there had been an accident, I would have had my contribution to the accident. The fact that I had been rushing a little bit would have made a difference in that one situation. Some difference. Maybe I wouldn't have been paying as much attention. Maybe just we'd been further in the intersection. A variety of things could have happened. And so I came to that intersection. My contribution to coming to the intersection was I was impatient. I wasn't paying much attention. That was motivated by a certain, I don't know if it's the right word, but a certain greed, or to get somewhere, to get something, to be in a hurry. So in the Buddhist analysis, the karma of the situation is not who is legally responsible or what is the physical cause and effect relationship going on there. The karma is that part of the that smaller piece of the cause and effect relationship that is related to the intention and the motivation that I brought to the situation. So if I brought a little bit of impatience and wanted to get somewhere, that's where my karma is found. And and there are consequences of acting on intentions or being motivated in different ways. How those consequences play out in the physical world is a mess to try to figure out. Because I could have easily, maybe, have been patient and mindful and slow in my driving and come to that same stop sign. Everything was cool. I was knew my intention was completely pure, the purest driver in California at that moment. And then I get rear-ended. So, in that situation, I didn't contribute karmically. So there, if I study that situation and look at it, say, well, maybe I should remember to look in my rearview mirror. But karmically, there was no motivation that kind of operated there. But in the first situation, if I was a little pushing and impatient, there is this karmic kind of pattern set in motion there. If I had driven mindfully up to the intersection and seen someone was impatient and thought, boy, I bet he's having a hard day. Maybe I'll just kind of, you know, back away from the intersection a little bit and make sure that he has lots of space to get by. As a generous act. That's a motivation of generosity. And that'll have a different effect. Now, if I backed up as an act of generosity, I still might have been rear-ended. We don't know what the physical cause and effect is going to be. But how the teaching of karma works is that what motivates what you do tends to play out certain ways in the physical and the world. If you act in kindness, in generosity, that tends to play out and come back to you with similar kind of energy or similar kind of behavior. Good things happen. Tends to be that way. But there's no guarantee. If you do things that are unskillful, unwholesome, if you are greedy and hateful and spiteful and mean to your neighbors, chances are that your neighbors are not going to treat you very well. They're not going to, you know, help you out next time you need gas because you, you know, whatever, I don't know. You know, they're going to leave you alone. Boy, you were mean one time too many. So they tend to be that way. But no guarantee that they're always going to be mean in return. There might be someone who's just really generous and kind, and they don't care how mean you are. But the tendency is that way. So how you behave will tend to create certain kind of effects in the world. The teachings of karma in the Buddhist tradition is not so much about what happens in the world, but what cause and effect is set in motion in your own mind, in your own heart. So if you act with impatience or greed, that tends to produce a habit, that tends to produce certain remnants that stays in your mind or your heart that will play itself out. I've done behavior that I'd rather not tell you about. And basically thought I was getting away with it. You know, no problem, fine. Until I sat down to meditate. And if I hadn't meditated, maybe the karma wouldn't have caught up to me. What do you think of that? But I sat down to, no? I sat down to meditate and it caught up to me. Oh! You know, sometimes, I remember once in a shock, oh, what did I do? How could I have done that? I felt really bad. So I went and made amends. But I could have not meditated or something like that. It might have been years before somehow worked through my system. Or maybe it never worked through my system. And there was stayed for a lifetime a certain tension somewhere in my body, my heart, my mind, certain kind of maybe, you can imagine all kinds of things. Maybe if you tell the lie, and you got away with it, so-called, maybe a little piece of your own mind is more likely to lie in the future. Maybe a little piece of your mind mistrusts yourself a little bit. Maybe a little piece of your mind mistrusts other people because of that. And so it starts playing out this whole field of mistrust that plays itself out. Who knows how it's going to play itself out? The teachings of karma say that your intention, the quality of the motivation you act on, the quality of motivation that goes through you, plant seeds that will ripen and return in some way or other. And we don't know how it's going to come back. I don't think it's some mysterious tally sheet in the sky. And it doesn't mean that everything that happens to you, you're responsible for. It's really oppressive, the teachings that karma, your karma is the cause of your current condition. And it's been used in countries where karma is a big teaching. That kind of teaching, you have your status in life because of your karma, has been used to reinforce social discrimination in a number of Asian countries. You belong to a certain kind of underclass of society, and that's the way it is. It's your karma. You know, must have done something really bad in your life, and we're just going to let you suffer because you don't want to interfere with your karma. You know? And here in this country, it plays itself out when someone gets sick, and someone says, "Oh, what did you? You know, you get cancer," and someone says, "Oh, you know, what did you do? You know, what did you? You know, as if you're responsible." So the teachings of karma are not about to explain how you got to here in some kind of absolute way. The Buddhist teachings on karma, as I understand it, are pointing you to learn from the present moment, to learn from this. And you learn two things. You learn, you know, so one mature way to approach it is, is there a contribution that I made in here? Even if the world is responsible for most of this, what's my contribution? How did I cling? How did I get angry? How did I get afraid? And how did I act on my fear? What did I do? Even though it's invisible to other people that was operating, what was your contribution? That's where you learn from it. So the question is, do we want to learn or do we want to be right? So, and I suggest that if you're a practitioner, you're much more interested in learning than you are in being right. It'd be nice if both operated together. But learning is much, you know, learning kind of moves you forward. The other thing of teaching the karma is, so you learn. And a little bit that involves reflecting, thinking back, remembering what happened, remembering as much as you can sometimes. It also involves, but teaching karma also really points us right back to the present moment. It's another one of those arrows that Buddhism uses, signposts that Buddhism uses, to encourage us to stay present in the present moment. Because it's only in the present moment that we can pay attention to our motivations, the quality of those motivations, and then start taking some responsibilities for the motivations that we're going to act on in the future. So one of the reasons why we emphasize so much in Buddhism, stay in the present, pay attention to the present moment, is so we can see what motivates us. And we can start seeing the difference between acting reactively versus responding wisely in the situation. Chances are, if you react, which is a kind of automatic pilot kind of reactions, then your past conditioning, the way you've been influenced by your own decisions and behavior in the past, the way you've been maybe influenced by society and other people, can act through you without any second thought. If you can be in the present moment and calm in the present moment, then you can kind of back up a little bit and say, what's going on here? Let's study this. How do I want to respond? What's a useful way of responding in this situation? Is it useful to respond meanly to that no good son of a? Or would it be useful to notice how stressed out he is? And perhaps, you know, give him a shoulder rub or something, you know, or be more forgiving or more understanding. So, in all situations, we can look at these two things. What is it that we can learn from here? What's our contribution to this? And how is it that we might behave, act on, what kind of motivations can we act on, what's the right approach we want to act on, that can help set in place better conditions for our happiness in the future. We tend to become happier when we set into place the habit, the conditioning, the support of generosity, of love, of kindness. The world tends to respond to us in a nicer way that way. We tend to produce different results when we learn to practice contentment. Then when we practice covetousness, we have different results when we learn to be be content with little, rather than want everything the advertisements tell us that we should have. There's different results, different things that happen. So I was thinking about this talk. I was thinking, what can I say today that might be useful after the stock market goes down to 800 points? And it looks like it's, you know, the American economy might be going down the drain. Who knows? There's a lot of fear about what's meaning. So I imagine some of you came here tonight kind of afraid, concerned about this big topic. And that too, I couldn't ignore the topic. It's really big on your minds. And so I thought, oh, I'll talk about karma. And so now, after having said all that, if I tell you, if I ask you, how is this your karma? Would you have a different kind of exploration of that question than if I had said it first thing we got here? How did you contribute? Not to the downfall of the American economy. Maybe. And, you know, how did you contribute? Well, you know, they said that the reason why, was it Washington Mutual folded? One of the reasons was there was a run on the money. There was too many people started taking their money out. I don't know if that's true, but so many individual contributions. So the panic can have a big effect. But, you know, if you find yourself in a financially stressed situation because of what's happening, of course we have to look at what's going on externally in the world and how to take care of ourselves best, what to do in practical terms. But that's not where the spiritual learning is. Spiritual learning, if you know, there might not be any for you there, but what, you know, is to look. What was my motivation that I was acting on? How was I behaving? What were my values? What was going on for me that I contribute to find myself in this situation? A lot of people I know 10 years ago got caught up in a wave of greed around here. I wish I'd taken pictures of it. I was amazed driving up and down 101, I don't know how long ago now, 6 years ago. There were these amazing billboards about how I forget exactly what they were, but everyone deserves to be wealthy. It was like this very kind of assertive or kind of strange kind of attitude about, you know, you should all get rich. And I don't see those billboards anymore. And so a lot of people I know got caught up in this wave of, the stock market keeps going up. I think I'll just, you know, invest more money, maybe a little bit more than I usually would have. And then you find yourself stressed. Was there greed operating there, or was it wisdom? Maybe both. Maybe it was your best understanding. So what is your contribution? And it's not meant to be a heavy thing here. But I'm suggesting that's where the learning is. And then part of the learning is to look and see what are the motivations, what are the values that are not only that I want to live on, that are supportive and helpful for me here and now, but what are the things what are the motivations, way of living that sets up conditions that allows me to be happier and freer into the future? And so one of the really central values or practices that Buddhism encourages is the practice of being content with little. If I had taught that 6 years ago, 10 years ago in Silicon Valley, many years, about that, maybe, it's, I don't know how long ago it was now, maybe 12 years ago. There was a woman named, what was her name? I forget now her name. She used to come here with us, to us. She had a radio program in San Jose, Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. And she'd interview people. So I went down there and she interviewed me about Buddhism. And she asked me at some point, what is Buddhism have to, you remember this is back at the boom time, right? And so what does Buddhism have to, you know, say about our, you know, life here in Silicon Valley? And I said, well, to help us and all that. Well, I said, well, it has a lot to teach, I said. But it's probably important to say that Buddhism is also very subversive. I don't know how that went over on the audience. And how I meant it subversive is in this way. I've been told that in Buddhism there's a long tradition of teaching contentment with little and things like that. And I've been told that the Thai government outlawed the monks from giving that teaching in Thailand because they were concerned that that was going to slow down the economic growth. So, contentment with little. Now, how is that supportive? To do it as a moral imperative is just a drag. But to do it with some clear understanding of how being content with little can lead to your happiness. So you're not so busy, you don't put yourself in situations where you're so stressed financially, perhaps. And perhaps there's less to take care of. So I don't know, what any of you have done in the current economic situation, in your situation. I certainly feel for you that many people are struggling. And many people are stressed out by this and worried. But you came here to IMC, to a Buddhist meditation center. So you're looking towards Buddhism for some kind of resources. And so the resource I'm offering you today is that you want to learn more than you want to assign blame. And you want to learn what is your contribution to all this. Not to all this, maybe that's too big. What's your contribution to this? Even if you're only 1% responsible. Maybe from the external world's point of view, you're not responsible at all. But still, you are being motivated and acting on certain impulses. And so what were those in you? Can you understand that? And then, can you place yourself in the present moment and take a little bit charge in taking responsibility for how you choose to act next. And that's the area of responsibility I think that Buddhism puts us on. Rather than you responsible for what has happened to you, it's more like given what's happened to you this moment, take responsibility for what you act on next. And even if you do your best, take responsibility on acting on what's next, and you make a mistake, Buddhist ethics tends to be forward-looking. So rather than lingering in the past, we look in the past just enough to learn from it, and then we're forward-looking to figure out, how can I do better in the future? So that lingering in guilt or lingering in blame is not considered very productive, but rather forward-looking. How can I do better now? How can I do better now? So, was that a relevant enough topic for today? So now you have a chance. We have about 10 minutes. You can bring up questions or comments or reservations or protests.
So is there such a thing then as unwinding karma?
What do you think it means, unwinding?
My present perception is that it's a exploration of tendencies. Of kind of what you carry with you. So maybe the answer is yes. I'm kind of unwinding the stuff that's inside.
Maybe we can say unwinding the momentum, releasing the momentum you know, if you're greedy once, maybe there's no momentum. But if you just spend the whole day being greedy, you know, if you go shopping, and just, you know, just look and look and look and look and look. I used to, when I was younger, I used to like going to bookstores. And I would leave the bookstore so exhausted. And after a while, why am I so exhausted every time I leave a bookstore? And then I eventually discovered it's because I would want almost every title I saw. So wanting. So this momentum of tension and stuff and it was built up from that. So if you set enough motions, enough of these moments together, momentum gets created, tension gets created. And so sometimes it's hard to stop the momentum, so it has to slow down and unwind. And so, you know, stopping, you know, going, sitting, meditating, can have great value just because we stopped. You know, independent of paying attention and developing meditation, just the fact that we stopped can allow things to unwind. And I would say that the great, great majority of the tension that we hold in our body is wound up karma. And so if we sit and relax, that karma is unwinding. Sorry? Sometimes by doing nothing. I mean, there's a certain amount of tension just unwinds when we do nothing. Especially surface tension. Some of the deeper held tensions, deeper momentum, deeper ways in which karma is held, you might not get to it by simply taking a long vacation and sitting and doing nothing. Sometimes it requires much deeper work.
Thank you.
Red light should be on.
Okay, got it. In business, or say even if you're running a business and it's, you know, you're involved with lots of people, you know, being a householder or a businessman is fairly difficult not to generate karma. You're intensely involved. Your motivations may not be money at all. It may be, you know, that you may be able to make a contribution to medicine or, you know, a lot of lovely things, but you're still so motivated that you create disharmony in your business. And that's, of course, everybody, if you've ever been in any business, that happens. I imagine running RMC has problems. I mean, you may have to remove people from certain positions because they're not doing that well, you know, and how you do that and all. Yeah,
mostly
that.
I wonder if sometimes if I should be removed.
some of them want to be removed, right?
I'm not taking care of things well enough.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm basically, you know, setting this out for comment, but, you know, it gets very complicated and
well, I think it's helpful. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think it's helpful to distinguish two kind of realms.
Yeah.
The simple realm is looking at, being honestly looking at what motivates you in the situation. Is the best qualities of your heart fueling the motivation? So, for example, are you fueled by generosity, by love, by kindness, by friendliness, by wisdom? And if so, that's good. But then that might be at the base of it. But then when you try to implement that in the world, do you maintain that, or do you get caught up in other things? You know, those other people, they better, you know, get onto it right away. You know, they better realize I mean business because I'm important for me to get that friendly letter out to everyone. So the idea is, what I'm suggesting is that it's relatively easy to track your own motivation in the different situations. And if it's not easy for you, then I think it's very important to go for a vacation, go for a walk, Go do something. And really reflect deeply. Do you want to live a life where you're not, where you can't track what motivates you? Because, you know, is that a wise? That's in the long term, is that really how you want to live your life? And then maybe you need to change something. Real world changes are necessary sometimes. Remember I said Buddhism is subversive. But then, so that's one realm, is your motivation. How that plays out in the complicated work world of a business or a community, where there's misunderstandings and people have different needs and agendas and all kinds of stuff, and confusions happen, and you know, it gets so complex that you know, most of us are not wise enough to understand it all, and to make the best choices and all that stuff. So then, and then we'll make mistakes. We'll do the best we can, we'll make mistakes. And then it helps a lot if you can look at your intention, review it, and know, well, at least my intention was good. So I can go face that person who felt hurt because of my communication. And I can say, well, my intention was good. I'm really sorry that you were hurt. How can we do better in the future? You know, so it's a lot easier to have that conversation if you know your intent, you know. If your intention was bad, then it's harder to have that conversation. But I think the mature thing to do then is to go to the person and say, look, I blew it. You know, I apologize that I was motivated by my anger. And I blew it, and, you know, I'll try not to do that again. So does this make some sense?
Oh, yeah.
Is it relevant?
Yeah, it's relevant. And, yeah, I do a lot of apologizing.
Are the apologies accepted?
No. Depends on the person. I also apologize to my wife.
Do you forgive yourself?
That's hard.
Would it be useful if you could?
That I have in this life. Mm-hmm. And I actually find that that's very comforting, thinking that I'm going to contribute what I'm here to contribute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it kind of releases me at times from beating myself up for not being as good a person as I'd like to be, and also to forgive myself for some of my miscomings and stuff. But I just wanted to contribute that.
Great. It's beautiful. And I think being able to contribute to the world is, you know, one of the beautiful things, meaningful things to do with our life. But I think you want to be a little bit careful if we distinguish the chain of cause and effect that gets in motion through, that has to do with intentionality, the inner life of intentions, and that which plays out in the physical world. The physical world tends to respond to our intention a certain way, but there's no guarantee. But the inner world is invariable. Your karma will come back. So I hope that you all become students of your karma. Thank you.